welcome to Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. So I have a few more podcasts to bring out until Christmas time. So if you are looking for a great Christmas present, then head on over to my website, becomeaguitaristtoday.com. Then you'll be able to get one of the packages just in time for Christmas. In this episode, I interview Matt Deacon from the Bob Lazar Story. He's originally from the UK, but he's been living in New Zealand for the past 20 years. So Matt talks about some of his influences, including Frank Zappa, and breaks down his style of music, which is the progressive rock. We also talk about his new album, Baritonia. Now, I must apologise, the first 26 and a half minutes of the interview is just using my iPhone speaker to record it. Unfortunately, it wouldn't kick into my car stereo, which is the better sound. But then in that 26 and a half minute point, you'll hear that the sound change where it switches to my car speakers. So we start off the interview with Matt telling us a bit about his instrumental progressive band, Bob Lazar Story.
I started the Bob Lazar Story in about 2004. Well, not really. I released my first sort of solo album in 2004. It was all kind of ambient with a bit of rock involved, mainly guitar-based, all instrumental, under my own name, Matt Deacon. I just decided I didn't want to go under my name. I just thought, I didn't want to be mixed up with a singer-songwriter because that wasn't my kind of music. So I was like, look, I'm coming up with a name. So I went Bob Lazar Story. And 2006, released Sick, first album. And got a couple of mates involved, one playing drums on a couple of tracks. Most of it was drum machine because of the first one. It was 2006, man. I didn't know you could do online drums. You could get people to play drums for you online and you can download stuff. And then since then, I've done another five releases. So I've got six releases overall. Last three or four, I got my mate Chris Jago to play drums on, and he just takes it to the next level. Sensational drummer. I write all the music and then I pass it to him and he just interprets the drums. I'll write charts out for him, but I give him a complete blank canvas as to what he wants to do. And he usually does amazing stuff for me. Six releases and it's all instrumental progressive rock, occasional vocals from my wife. She does an occasional bit of either spoken word or a little bit of oohs and ahs here and there, but it's mainly instrumental music.
But do you play the keyboards and bass too?
No, I program the keyboards. I use the piano roll in Logic to do all my keyboard parts. The bass, my mate Fudd, Mike Fudakowski, played bass on two or three releases, not the last couple. He's been busy. I'd like to get him involved in the next one because he's a sensational bass player. I played bass on the first album, Sick. That was before I met Fudd. And then when I met him, I said, well, I don't need to play bass anymore. You can do it, mate, because you're amazing. And I'm a bit shit on the bass. But yeah, keyboards mainly programmed. I don't think I've ever played any live parts. I just get the mouse out and write a lot of music just with the mouse, actually.
Wow, that's amazing. I guess to listen to it, you think, oh, wow, yeah. He's got a, unbelievable keyboardist in the band.
It's easy to write busy parts on the piano roll. But I find that I actually write a lot for guitar via the piano roll as well. It's an interesting way of writing. We can get sort of stuck in grids on the guitar and, you churn out a few cliches and that. If I write lines on the piano roll, or the matrix editor, as Logic used to call it. If I write parts on that, it usually gets me out of those guitar grids and writing more interesting lines, and then I have to sit down and learn them on the guitar, and I like that. That's about the only real technical practice I do, is learning parts that I write for the keyboard or via the piano roll.
That's really good.
Yeah,
I mean, because I haven't listened to pretty much all the last two albums and bits of the earlier ones as well. I mean, you can definitely hear the production difference in the last two, I think.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. The last one in particular, because the last one was written with the iMac. The ones before that, I had a sort of Frankenstein PC that had gone through many changes and lots of different hard drives in it and stuff. And it was pretty much falling apart and quite hard to use, especially the second to last album, which it was more an EP, was Self-Loathing Joe.
Yep.
That was a nightmare to produce. I was quite happy with all the sounds on it, but in the final mixes and all that, all these little pops and clicks would turn up on all of the audio tracks.
Yeah.
And so I had to go through each audio file with a digital pencil and take all the little clicks and pops out. It just took hours and hours and hours. And every mix I did thereafter, I had to then go through that mix with the pencil and take all the clicks out.
Yeah.
Nearly drove me absolutely mad.
Yeah.
And then so I was like, right, I can't use that anymore. And it stopped working pretty much. So I said, right, I'll buy the bullet, I'll get an iMac. And Logic was only an extra $200, and it's just amazing. Very easy to use, and the sounds are great. I've had no audio problems at all. So the last one, I think, is a step up. I think, yeah, I think you're right there.
Yeah, oh no, definitely, yeah. You can notice it for sure. Songs like you listen to, it's not like your three chord songs, so how long do you think it would take for like one song to from start to finish?
Because my previous computer died, there was quite a big gap between me finishing off Self-Loathing Joe, which was the fifth release, and starting Baritonia. And so by the time I got a computer, I was just ready, and so they all just sort of flew out quite fast. I was just, a seed of an idea will start, and then I'll just sort of flesh it out. But I mean, what was unusual about the last album is it's got some long songs on. You know, for a sort of proggy artist, I do quite short songs usually, you know, and so at like a minute and a half song or 2 minute song, they'll take me months to sort of finish one off, but I can write a song in a couple of days, but then I'll just spend the next sort of few weeks, months, just sort of fleshing out a bit more and adding bits in, bits and bobs. But I do get to the point where I'm like, right, I've had enough of that, let's move on.
Yeah.
But the entire last album took about 4 months to write and record most of it. It was good. It was a good deal. You know, went fast, but I was so relieved and I was ecstatic to have a computer that worked. But I just went for it and it just sort of flew out. Like, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, because like I said, I mean, you listen to it, it's like one song, like six songs in one, really. The different parts, different time signatures and things like that, so...
I've been accused of having musical ADHD before, and it's true. I get really I get a bit bored if a song's taking too long to start or build up. I just want busyness all the time. Well, most of the time, you know. Sometimes I like a bit of a lighter mood, but I do like music that's all over the place and constantly changing.
Yeah.
So that's probably reflected in my own music. The first track off the last album was probably the first thing I wrote when I started writing, and I was just it was just an exercise in write. I'll do six bars of this, then I want to change. It wasn't like it didn't flow out organically. It was like, I'll stop there, do the next bit. And then the hard bit is making those bits sort of try and flow together afterwards. But yeah, it was just like, right, I've done this. Now I'm going to put another bit next to it that doesn't sound anything like it and see if I can make it work. It's like just an exercise, really. But I was really happy with the results. I was like, well, that's a good song, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm happy with that. Yeah, that'll do. It's rare that I'll write a groove and just keep a groove going for a whole song because I get a bit bored, you know.
Yeah.
No, and there's loads of music that is like that. I know I'm like, I will listen to some music like that, but I like to write music that keeps on moving, keeps on turning.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's interesting.
Mm.
That's great.
What kind of music are you into yourself, Adam?
I mean, I grew up with more of the, the hard rock.
Oh.
I mean, my favourite's Van Halen, so I grew up with Van Halen.
Yeah.
But then I like also like El Dimeola.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the classical stuff, John Williams, so a bit of everything really. But I mean, yeah, the original bands I had were more the hard rock material.
I grew up listening to Van Halen as well.
Okay.
I consider Eddie Van Halen one of the pioneers of the guitars. I mean, maybe been a handful of pioneers of the electric guitar, really. I mean, yeah. Hendrix, I suppose. But I think the next one after Hendrix was probably Eddie Van Halen. Completely changed it, didn't he?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And then, I was into Steve Vai. Brilliant. Mm. You know, I love Steve Vai. Great songwriter. And you can tell that he spent a long time with Zappa as well. because it comes out in a lot of his compositions and that, like.
Yep.
But even to this day, I don't think anyone sounds like Eddie Van Halen.
No, definitely not. Well, it's funny you should say that about Zappa, because I was actually wrote a note down here. I was listening to the second album, the Self-Loathing Joe.
Yep.
I think it was track number 2. I know, it just had a bit of a Frank Zappa vibe to it. So was he one of your influences?
A massive influence.
Oh, okay.
Frank Zappa. I came to him probably quite late. I was about 19 or 20. And I think the first few times I heard him, I was just like, I'm just not ready for this. I can't do it. Yep. It's mad. Because I grew up listening to, my formative years and my sort of teenage years was metal.
Yep.
Loads of metal. And then I sort of gradually moved on into, like, I realised I like guitarists, so it didn't really matter what the genre was.
Yep.
But then someone played me Zappa, and I was just like, wow, I don't know what's going on. I do not know what's going on. And then I realised that actually, like, that I like not knowing what's going on for quite a while, you know. I like songs that take me about 6 months to a year to figure out what's happening.
Yeah.
Zappa is just phenomenal, amazing. And some of the musicians he's had playing with him, it's incredible. I mean, I'm a mad Zappa fan, but I still haven't listened to all of his music. There's so much out there. So much into the comedy Zappa stuff, the sort of the Bobby Brown stuff and all that. Not really into that so much. I'm more into the instrumental sections where the band are just going off and he's just writing super, super complicated stuff.
Yeah.
Even all the stuff on the Synclavier, brilliant. Love it. It all sounds a bit sort of synthetic now, but his writing skills are just out of this world.
Amazing. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, moving on from Zappa, I got into people that were in his bands because I was like, oh, Mike Keneally, who's this?
Yeah.
Do you ever listen to Mike Keneally?
No, never have.
Oh, sensational, mate. He's amazing. He played with Zappa on the last tour Zappa did before he packed it all in. Keneally went on to play in Steve Vai's live band.
Oh, okay.
But the music, his music on his own that he does is absolutely amazing. And to me, he's got a better hit rate of good songs to bad songs than Zappa did, because Zappa, I found, even though he's the most amazing musician and writer, you have to sometimes wade through a bit of shit to get to the golden nuggets.
Yeah.
And but with Keneally, almost everything's a golden nugget. Ooh. Absolutely amazing, mate. Blow your mind if you listen to him.
Oh, I'll definitely check that out.
So Keneally's a big influence as well. So Zappa, there's Keneally. I mean, I studied music theory for a while, did a course in jazz. Yeah. Did a jazz diploma, but I'm not a big jazzer. I'm not a mad jazz fan, but I do like jazz guitarists, but don't listen to much jazz.
Yeah.
Really, as it goes. Do you like a bit of jazz there, Adam?
I've never really been a big jazz fan. I'm jazz fusion, like I said, Aldo Meola, that type of thing, but not traditional jazz or anything.
Yeah, I do prefer the fusion, because even though they'll go off on endless solos in fusion, often the bits between the solos are really worked out and well played.
I mean, I appreciate the music, like I appreciate the chords and everything. Like, I went to a jazz teacher for a little while, and I learned all the different chords and thought, oh, that's very interesting.
I was a mad Joe Pass fan for a while, just Joe Pass's instrumental, just his solo guitar, just him on his own, because I was really amazed by his mix of the bass lines, the chords and the melody together. I was like, oh, this is great. So listening to him and working out his stuff really worked on my ear, because I used to just transcribe a lot of his stuff. The language of jazz is amazing. All the chords you'll ever need are in jazz, you see.
Yep.
So I do use a lot of jazz chords a lot of the time. Or, the jazz theory that I studied helped me figure out what to play over certain chords. I'm crap at improvising. I'm not really into that. But what I'm saying is, when I'm writing music, I can look at a chord and go, all right, I know what scale to play over that. So I'll write a line on the piano roll using that scale. So it's really helped me sort of figure all that side of things out. But Aldi Meola, handy. Great player.
Yeah.
I like the stuff he did with McLaughlin and Paco de Lucia.
Yep, yeah.
Brilliant. But I was just talking about Zappa, though. I downloaded a Zappa concert from, I think it was the early 80s. And for one song, Aldi Meola gets up on stage with him.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing. It's really good.
Yeah.
It's worth listening to the 2-hour concert. I don't know what it is. I'll send you a link sometime. But
bloody hell.
Amazing. Amazing.
Oh, and
but it's rare for me to like a guitarist like that, because I often find with those guys that play a lot of acoustic stuff,
yep,
right? Their technique doesn't translate as well to electric. They'll do their classical vibrato or whatever on electric. It doesn't work for me. Like, you know, all sounds a bit squawky in the end, but he's sensational. He's brilliant. I like decent guitar. I like guitarists that can play, but if there's no song behind it, I'm not interested. It's just technical wankery. Because if you look at the internet now, I mean, my Facebook feed is full of guitarists just playing solos on like 7-string Strandberg guitars to sort of a genty background, and they're amazing technically, but it's not doing anything for me. It's all very sort of soulless, really. But I do admire their skill, because I haven't got to that point. I got to the point where I can express myself as I want to, but I can't do flashy solos. That's not me.
You make up for it in other ways.
Yeah, I'm more into writing songs, really. I find guitar is just a tool for me to write songs these days. You know, I do love playing, but I realised years ago that I was never going to be a virtuoso player or anything. So I was like, look, I'll channel all my energy into writing music instead of being a lead guitarist. And it's worked out all right. I'm quite happy.
You always been in New Zealand?
No, I moved out here 20 years ago.
Okay.
I was born in Liverpool.
Yep.
And when I was 24, I moved out here. And I've been back once or twice just to say hello. But no, New Zealand's been home for 20 years now. I married a Kiwi. And that's good. I used to teach guitar for a living.
Oh, okay.
Out here. I did it for quite a while until we had a baby, and then I was like, look, I haven't got the time to do it now. Do you ever do teaching yourself?
Yeah, that's what I do. I'm a full-time teacher.
So you know, like, you got to do a lot of prep, haven't you?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So I was like, you know, I reached the point where I was like, I know if I do this, if I carry on doing this, I'll be winging it, because I haven't got time for prep because I've got a kid and that. Like, so I was like, look, I've got to change career here. I packed in teaching guitar about 10 years ago. I mean, I do a couple privates here and there, but I don't make a living doing it now.
Okay.
No, I was a teacher for quite a while, and then I became a postie instead.
Yep.
And what I found was that that really freed me up to write music, because often when you're teaching all the time, I don't know about you, but I found when I was teaching a lot, I didn't have the energy to do my own music at the end of the day. Yeah. So it took the fun out of it for me. There were, along the way, many pupils, you know, a handful of pupils that were brilliant and amazing to teach, and really inspired me as well, because, you know, I taught kids that, like, now I look at them and they're like about 10 times better than me on a guitar, and that's brilliant, like, you know.
Yeah.
So it's worth doing. But I just couldn't write music once I was teaching. Just couldn't really stick at it.
Yeah.
So I had to change careers and do something non-musicy, so I could do the music stuff at home on my own.
Yeah. And so do you have a band as well with your original things?
Well, we did gig about 10 years ago. I did pull a small band together here in Christchurch with Fudd on the bass and a good drummer called Kev Roberts and a keyboard player, Nathan. And we did rehearse a fair bit, and we did a few gigs in and around Christchurch. It's a massive effort, though, to really, you can imagine it's quite hard to sort of learn this stuff and get it tight as a band.
Oh, yeah.
When you do that, it takes a lot of time. So then you end up playing a gig to about 7 people somewhere. So it's like, look, I don't know. I was like, well, that's great. But then at the same time, we started having kids, not together, you understand. But I had a kid, Fudd. I had a kid, he's got 2 kids now. So, you know, life got in the way, really, there.
Yeah.
So I just concentrated on writing instead of performing, you know. It's something I'd like to do again. And the job I've got now, I think it's freed me up time-wise that I can start thinking about it again. But the last 10 years as a postie is like 6 days a week, and you do your job and you get home and you're knackered.
Yeah.
And you ain't got time for anything else. It was an effort just to write music sometimes just because I was so tired. But I was always like, yeah, I want to do it. I just need to stay awake.
Yeah.
I'd like to play again in the band. It's just, it's finding the right people and then it's hard to balance commitment levels, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
if you,
for sure.
If you write all the gear yourself, no one's as invested as you in playing. So it's really hard, not so much motivate them, but it's just hard to keep a band going, really. And I sort of like the approach of a Zappa or a Steve Morse, in that, you know, you write all the music and you ask your mates to play, or, you know, you pay them to play or whatever. I'm not a control freak, but that's just the way it works. And because we're all had limited time, it was like, right, get down to rehearsal, here's what we're playing, let's go, rather than jam it out and try and work out parts and, you know, just jamming. I wasn't into jamming because it was, you know, just like, look, limited time, let's do it, here's your parts, let's go, bang. And it was great, it was amazing, you know. They were brilliant, it was brilliant to play, but, you know, like I say, we were like kids and things just tapered off a little bit. But it's life, isn't it?
Yeah. So with your recordings, is that more for yourself, just to have it there to get it out, or do you try and promote it, sell it?
Oh God, yeah, I'm a one-man promotion machine for years. You know, any opportunity to flick someone a link on Facebook, that's the beauty of Facebook, really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
I've met a lot of people. It's how I actually got back in touch with my drummer, because I left the UK sort of almost pre-email days, so I lost touch with a lot of people, but I bumped into Chris via Facebook and got him involved again. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make a living off my music, but, you know, I'll try and promote it. And I've got a few fans dotted around the place. But last year was good because I approached a label in the UK called Bad Elephant Music, because I'd seen them on Facebook, and they were they'd signed up a few sort of instrumental proggy bands. And I was like, look, this is right up my street here. So I emailed the head honcho, Bad Elephant Music, David Elliott, and I said, look, I think I want to be on your label, and here's my band camp. And he had a listen and was like, yeah, sound, we're into that, let's do it. So they released the last CD, Baritonia, on their label, which is brilliant for me, because it didn't cost me anything.
Yeah, that's really good.
I hope they don't lose money on me, because they've been really good. But it's, you know, it's these days it's hard to sell any type of music, because people are just in the world of Spotify, really, and iTunes and Apple Music, and they just want to, they don't want to pay for it. Or, you know, even downloads have dropped off. I mean, CDs are dead, but downloads are dying now as well. People are just all about the streaming, which is unfortunate, and the conversion rate from streaming to purchase is bad. And if you're not gigging, it's even harder to get the music out there, you see.
Yeah, that's right.
In effect, it's like pushing shit uphill with a piece of string a lot of the time, but it doesn't stop me from doing it, because I just want to write music. I mean, so ultimately, it is for me. It's to entertain myself, but if I can get other people interested in it, it's a buzz. It's great. When someone comes back to you and says, look, I like that, it's amazing, brilliant, I'm like, oh, fantastic, great. But it doesn't alter the way I write. I just write for me what I want to hear. And if anyone else likes it, well, brilliant. And if I can make a few dollars here and there, superb, mate. You know?
Yeah, it's the best way. That's good. So it's all available on iTunes? Is that the main place?
iTunes.
Or your website as well?
Yeah, my website's lucidbrucemusic.com. The best way to find the music is via Bandcamp. Just type in The Bob Lazar Story. Bandcamp's amazing, isn't it? Have you got any stuff on Bandcamp?
No. I should.
I think it's the best platform, because you can listen to it, so try before you buy. But also, if you decide to commit to downloads, you can buy a physical CD off most bands, but if you just want to download, you can download any format. So MP3 if you want, or you can do Waves, or you can do your FLAX or your AUX or whatever. So you can do any audio format you want. It's fantastic. And the artist sees most of the money. They take a small fee themselves. And then when they send it to you by PayPal take a little tiny chunk as well. Whereas iTunes is good. I suppose more people have access to iTunes, but iTunes take a hell of a chunk off you.
For sure.
And it's, you know, it's, I think it's only MP3s through iTunes. So I try and encourage people just to do the Bandcamp thing. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I've found so many good bands via Bandcamp as well. Between Bandcamp and the internet, such as Facebook and Twitter, that's about all you need these days.
Yeah,
I think.
That's right.
You know,
yeah, find everything.
So, you know, I encourage everyone to get out there and buy it. I'm particularly happy with the last three releases. They've come out great, and songwriting's, you know, it's always improving. Yeah, the early stuff's great as well. I mean, I've been at it with the, as the Bob Lazar Story since 2006 now. That's like nearly 12 years and six releases, so there's a fair bit there. And it's all kind of evolving. You know, you can't write the same album every time. It's a bit boring, that, you know.
Yeah,
you've got to evolve as an artist, so, you know, it's all slowly evolving. It's like, you know, this last one sounds completely different to my first one, but you can still hear, you can still hear that it's me, so I like that. There's a thread through it all. Particularly, there's a food stool thread. I don't know if you'd noticed, but I've got a lot of food stool related songs.
I feel that, yeah.
Got a food stool t-shirt on.
Look at that.
I'm not crazy, but I used to have this stool that I used to write on in here. I used to use, but I also used to take it out into the lounge and have me dinner off it. So it's food stool. God, I'm getting emotional now because the food stool was stolen. As in, food stool got stolen from my garage about 7 years ago, and he's gone now. But, you know, he lives on in the memory and in the music, you see. So every release every release has got a food stool related song on it.
Yeah. That's good. Actually, just going back to the last album, track number 6, In the Woods with Tony Iommi. How'd that one come about?
Yeah, do you mean the title or the actual song itself?
Yeah, both really.
Okay, well, I'll come to the title at the end.
Okay.
That's one of the longer songs, isn't it? It's three 6-plus-minute songs on that album. You know, it starts off, it's all quite electronic-y. I would have put more guitar on it, but I think I was approaching my deadline for when I had to have the album in, and I was like, oh, well, this is good enough. I'm quite happy with this. You know, you know what, you can go on and on, can't you? Just adding bits, but, you know, you've got to have that discipline to say, look, stop, that's enough. And I think I did on this one. Again, it's one of those ones that goes all over the show. It all builds nicely, I think, to one of my best sort of solos. It's more of a, you know, traditional blues-based solo.
I just sort of
let loose a bit on that one. It's about the only improvised solo I've got, I think, on most of my releases. I think I could be the only one, actually.
It really stood out to me because of that solo.
I was it was the first take. I was well happy with it. I didn't know I was going to do it. I just hit play and it popped out. I was really happy with it. And I didn't edit it, didn't change anything, use the sound. That's a good thing about Logic. You can set up your tracks and your sounds there, and then go back to another song, come back, and the sound's there again. It's amazing. And so I just smashed it out, and I was like, oh, great. I did try another solo. I did do take two, but I was like, nah, it hasn't got the feel of take one. And, you know, my improv is limited to that kind of bluesy playing a lot of the time, but I like a bit of mixed Lydian. It's my favourite mode as well. It's not much mixed Lydian, that's mainly blues based, but I was very, very happy with it. The song itself is just, it flows nicely. And it's long. It's long, but every the last few CDs I put out, I've offered the opportunity to anyone out there to name a track if they want to. And if their name's good enough, it sticks.
Okay.
I'll keep it, and I'll credit them as well. So I put it out there, and my mate actually from back in Liverpool, Carl David Baxter, also known as Stan, don't know why, he suggested In the Woods with Tony Iommi, and I thought, well, brilliant, mate, done deal, love it. I have tweeted Tony Iommi, I haven't heard back.
You never know, it could get out there.
I was very happy with that song. I mean, I like them all on that album, but that's got a bit of improv, you see. I mean, there's actually the second to last song, Blues for Food Stool, another Food Stool one, is just me twice. Overdubbed myself. Thank you. anymore. I used to. I'm probably less disciplined on the guitar these days, but I'll just pick it up and noodle out. I like mixing the blues with the mix of Lydian and Dorian, getting that nice sort of bluesy sound, but slightly better than straight blues. I like, I'm trying to think of players who really do. Oh, yeah, well, I used to listen to a lot of country music, you see.
Okay.
I sort of grew up listening to country music because my dad was bang into it, like, and so I got into all players like Albert Lee and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the chicken picking stuff. I'm not very good at it, but I like country bends, so I like to try and stick them in there.
Yep.
That's why I like Steve Morse as well.
I first heard of Steve Morse when I used to be in into a band called Triumph. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, you know, if you say Canadian power rock trio, people automatically go to Rush. But there were another band called Triumph, and they were amazing. Well, they were when I was like 12. I don't really listen to them now, but their guitarist was called Rick Emmett, and he was probably my first guitar hero, sort of alongside Eddie Van Halen.
Yep.
But they released an album, I think, in about 87 called Surveillance, and there was a song on it called Headed for Nowhere. And he's having a solo, and then this other guy jumps in, and I'm like, what's going on there? Oh, God, what's happening? There's all these chromatic notes dropped in, and all over. Oh, it's amazing. I didn't know what was happening.
Mm.
And I saw on the credits Steve Morse, like, who's this Steve Morse guy? And this is pre-internet, so it's kind of hard to find out those days. So you had to buy lots of magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
But turns out he was amazing. So he was in the Guitar Player Hall of Fame, or he won so many polls that he was just like, Hall of Fame or whatever. But he was in a band called the Dixie Dregs in the 70s, and he used to write it all as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of morphed into the Dregs. And it's all instrumental. They did one album with two vocal tracks on, which I always skip past. Brilliant song still. I mean, amazing player. But he's an amazing songwriter. Really eclectic. All the albums are like a bit of country, a bit of classical, a bit of jazz, but jazz fusion, whatever. So I got into Steve Morse. He was an amazing player, and he got me onto the alternate picking thing.
Yep.
He was really disciplined, amazing player. So I used to play a lot of Steve. I used to look for any sort of tuition stuff of his and try and get into the alternate picking. So about 10, 15 years ago, I was banging into all that technique. He's phenomenal. And then he joined Deep Purple.
Yeah.
Probably about 20 years ago now, over 20 years ago.
Yeah, well.
And he flies them around. He's a pilot as well, so he flies them everywhere. He's a control freak. He must be, because he writes every note. And but he's an amazing player. I mean, if you're into Dream Theater and all that stuff, which I'm not particularly, but their guitarist, what's his name, John Petrucci.
Yeah, John Petrucci,
massive Steve Morse fan, and you can hear it in his playing.
But
I was a mad Steve Morse fan. Still am. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
That was back in the day when I was banging into technique and a lot more shredding, but...
Yeah.
You just move past it as you get older, I think.
Yeah,
more of an ego thing. The shredding. It doesn't. If it serves a song, brilliant. But if it's just shredding for shredding's sake, it just leaves me cold, mate. Done with it.
Yeah.
I just get very. I just want to move on.
I'm
into melody. I realised.
Yeah.
Quite late in the day, I like melody because I used to like metal. But the thing about metal for me is it's very black and white. There's not much colour in the music, you see.
Mm.
So I'm after colour, and colour often comes from decent melodies and that, like. So I mean, there's so many amazing guitarists that blew my mind when I was younger.
Yep.
The thing about Steve Morse was he'd do it all, do the country, and so. I just really like the country stuff. I don't really like country music in terms of the song's a bit boring, but once the guitarist let loose, it's the opposite of what I've just said. It's not really serving the song, is it?
Mm.
It's just a bit of mad playing in the middle. So I'm a massive hypocrite because I've just said what I don't like, and I'm like, oh, it's great. But country's a bit different for me because I think it's the hardest style to play the country guitar to get it right,
to make
it sound good. But it's very musical. Very colourful.
Yeah.
Really like it. You know, I've got a Telecaster. I wanted to get a B-Bender put in it, but I didn't have a vintage bridge, and I was gutted.
Yeah.
I was going to have to get a vintage bridge. I was like, well, I can't afford all that. Forget it.
Yeah.
It's just occasionally to bend a B string. You know, that's not really worth it, is it? Like, you know.
That's right. Under the last albums, is there any other songs there you wanted to talk about?
You've touched on my favourite song, well, almost my favourite song, in the Woods with Tony Iommi.
Yeah.
I like the short one, Make It Like It Used to Be. Short and sweet, but, you know, covers a lot of ground.
Yeah.
And it's got some great playing from Chris. That was another one that probably I wrote it in a day, but then obviously fleshed it out. But all the idea was there, you know, it was done in the day.
Mm.
Sometimes I just get into a good space and I can really shit out the songs, like, and the, you know, I'm quite happy with the sort of basic demo idea. So I'm like, great, I'll work on that for a month or two and see what happens.
Yeah.
But I'm by no means a perfectionist. I will get to the point where I'm like, right, I'm done. Let's move on. And I'll leave mistakes in. You know, the first album's called Sick because I left loads of mistakes in, essentially saying, look, I realise there's mistakes there, but I've left it as is.
Yep.
And so, you know, I'm nowhere near a perfectionist.
All right. Well, thanks again, Matt. Really appreciate it. Yeah, that's good.
Well, this has been fun, Adam.
Yeah, no, thank you very much.
Cheers, fella.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Matt. So make sure you tune in on Wednesday where I catch up with Tim Harding from High Five. So until then, keep jamming.